Session number 9278.
Mr. Cotman, reel two.
And Malcolm Muggeridge came from a family in Croydon that had a good record in establishing socialist activities in Croydon. And he went into journalism and became correspondent for the Manchester Guardian. He went to Moscow and was for some months there, mainly in towns, and there was a rumour that there was a starvation in the Ukraine. And of course he knew that if he asked for permission to go there in order to report on it, it would be refused because they weren't letting foreign journalists know the truth about this. So he took some leave, some holiday, which meant that he didn't have to get any permits, and he just went there himself as an ordinary citizen, saw for himself, saw that people were literally dying of starvation in the streets, and of course that didn't fit in at all with the socialist image here that in the USSR everything was fine. And Malcolm Muggeridge had, I think, some difficulty in getting the true story back to the Guardian. And, of course, I think they weren't too keen on making it well known. He was up against all the orthodoxy of the Labour Party and quite a lot of the church. I mean, people like Hewlett Johnson would never criticise the USSR, and most of these people said that Muggeridge was talking a lot of nonsense and that it wasn't true. But years later, when facts were put together, people who had relatives there who died and so forth, it became obvious that Muggeridge was telling the truth.
Now, on the ILP Guild of Youth, which particular branch was it that you joined?
Barking. Barking.
What kind of membership did they have?
They were quite strong. We had about 20, 30, which is fairly strong for a Guild of Youth. We went continuously on holidays at camps. For about 4 years during that period, we went right up to the war.
And what, apart from these camps, what kind of activities did they conduct?
Oh, we went on marches to Hyde Park, usually right from Barking, East Ham, all along Blackwall Tunnel, behind all the sea of banners that you sometimes get a glimpse of these days. But in those days, they were really splendid sort of works of art. Took hours to make. Wonderful depictions of working class situations. In those days, the emblem of the working man was something to be admired. A strong arm and a hammer, the anvil, the fishermen with their nets, some sort of depiction of strong outdoor activity was looked on with great pride. It was much better to be doing something than, say, the intellectual, as you rarely saw priests or thinkers or anything like that. It was essentially a working man doing something emblem. And all these were on all banners, and there were really hundreds of them, thousands of people behind them.
How much political education was there in the ILP Guild of Youth from your personal experience?
It was quite high when I think back. They did a lot of research. They bought a lot of books and We had a lot of discussions with older people, and I suppose H.G. Wells, Shaw were the main ones. Marx a little, but not unduly emphasised. Keir Hardie, Robert Blatchford, H.M. Brailsford, these people were quite widely read.
Who were the particular individuals who took a leading role in the organisation?
Well, they were mainly local councillors. One of them is still a councillor at Dagenham, for example. They were nearly all local government active people.
Was this in the ILP or in the Guild of Youth?
Well, they were the fathers of the ILP who came to the Guild of Youth to enlighten the junior brethren, if I can put it like that. There were all sorts of other French people, I mean, that came to talk to us. Two that come to mind immediately: the Indian brothers, Krishna Menon and Aubrey Menon. And I think Krishna Menon became an Indian minister, didn't he? And he had the bad luck to be Minister of Defence when the Chinese came over the border. And it was a very sad thing, really, because he was preaching anti-war sort of messages to us at that age. I remember them both well. And I remember too the thing they said about colour. They said they didn't like to be referred to as black because they weren't black. They were brown and so on. But eventually, of course, it developed that black was something to be proud of as well as brown, but we hadn't evolved to that stage then.
Was there much anti-fascist activity in terms of anti-black shirt activity on the part of the Guild of Youth?
Yes, there was. Yes, there was indeed. We marched mostly around the Mile End, Stratford, and Hackney. This was due to the fact that a lot of Jewish shops had their windows broken by black shirt groups, and the black shirts tried to assert their authority by marching through the streets, which is a provocation to the residents and looked upon as an act of aggression, really. And eventually, because of the contra marches in which Guild of Youth, Young Communist League were particularly, and the Labour League of Youth were particularly active, resulted finally in the black shirts absenting themselves from the area. And they gradually ceased, and it stopped entirely by the outbreak of war.
You weren't at the Battle of Cable Street, were you?
No, I wasn't there, but I remember very well the occasion and the concern there was in the East End generally. We were a little farther away from it, really, in Barking and East Ham. It would be about 5 miles away. We frequently did come in to the centre, though.
You said that you left the Guild of Youth to join the YCL because it's of the do-gooder type of attitude of the Guild of Youth.
Yes.
What exactly did you mean by that?
Well, I meant that the ILP Guild of Youth, by concentrating on the message of socialism and the hope for mankind without any other example to show, made it a sort of do-good philosophy, a sort of political pie in the sky, if you see what I mean. Whereas the Young Communist League always had Russia there. So it gave it a bit of beef, if you like. It gave it a bit of... It proved, as far as I was concerned anyway, it proved to be an illusion. But nevertheless, my true feelings at that time were, well, at least we stand a chance of doing something and getting somewhere. The days of Moscow then were days of hope. So I thought that there was also another little complication. The idea crept in that to be a communist was to be more purposeful, more militant than being a socialist. The idea was there. I don't think it was based on anything very much other than the fact that Moscow had some degree of military strength and therefore some of it rubbed off on the communists, whereas the Guild of Youth just had the sort of political, Methodist, religious type message, if that makes it clear.
Yes. Now, which YCL branch did you join?
I joined at Bristol, mainly because there was no Guild of Youth much in Bristol. I don't think there was one at all, but they weren't very strong anyway. And I had contacts with some Bristol University youngsters of my own age who were quite interested in the communist movement. And, of course, there was a difference between the Communist Party and the Young Communist League. You have to go through a certain amount of screening and dedication and education and qualification to be a member of the Communist Party. But anyone could belong to the Young Communist League because it's, although it did have a philosophical connection, it was mainly a social sort of thing. So it was therefore an easy thing to join, which is, I suppose, partly why I did it. It isn't as though there was any contradiction between the socialist and communist name at that stage, although it certainly became emphasised later.
So was it called the Bristol branch of the Young Communist League?
Young Communist League, yes, that's right.
And what membership did they have, approximately?
Well, they were pretty strong, really. There was usually about 40 or 50 to most meetings. That's the Young Communist League I'm talking about, which is partly social, so all sorts of people joined rambling clubs, for example, and went to the dances, so that perhaps for the 40 or 50, only a handful of them would probably be really politically conscious. Although a lot of discussions took place on contemporary political events.
Did you go to the political activities apart from the dances and rambling clubs?
Yes, indeed. Particularly anti-fascist protesting. One quite memorable instance. At the Colston Hall, Bristol, the British Union of Fascists were holding a meeting. Moseley was speaking, and also William Joyce, who subsequently became Lord Haw-Haw. And I personally, having listened to them, rated Joyce as a better speaker than Moseley. I think he was absolutely wasted as Lord Haw-Haw because he was a very convincing and influential speaker in putting a case. And he was putting the fascist case in this particular evening, and there were a whole crowd of us students there. most of them from the university. And there was a whole line of people like myself protesting. And one girl in particular, whose voice was more strident and heard above the rest, and Joyce picked on it. And he said, if that young lady doesn't keep quiet, I'll have no alternative but to ask the stewards to eject her from the hall. She didn't keep quiet, and she was about, I would think, 12 seats in from the row. And we were lined up, 1, 2, 3, 4, right up to her. So the stewards had to take the first bloke and throw him out. And I think I was about the 7th. And they hurled me down the steps of Colston Hall in a manner which would frighten me now. But at the age of 16 or 17, it didn't matter. You just bounced down and found your feet and joined the rest and waited for the rest of the boys to be thrown out, you know, saying, oh, well, Charlie will be next.
Did the girl follow?
And then eventually they got hold of the girl.
Was it real rough stuff, or was it?
Yeah, it was quite rough. Yeah, they threw you. I mean, I don't. As I say, we're all young, and you can take a lot of more. You know, as in sport, people take injuries, don't they, in sport, which in later life, between, you know, 50 and 60, would make them quite ill.
And so, had a party of YCLers got together to go to this meeting?
Yes, sir. It was advertised, and we said, all right, let's go along, and we won't let them get away with it. You know, we'll interrupt their message sort of thing. And if Mosley had been awarded a farthing damages in some court case. And I remember some youngster called Derek always yelling out, has Sir Oswald got his farthing yet? And this sort of thing, you know. And they eventually chucked us out. I've changed my mind on this sort of thing since, because I don't think in a democracy that sort of behaviour should be encouraged. Obviously, with young people, you're going to get it. And it's quite healthy that it should be so. But I think that the elders and the wiser councils should prevail on them to hold their own meetings, put their own case, because busting up other people's meetings, in my experience, is counterproductive. And you'd far better let them put their case and answer it in your own way, responsibly, you know.
Now, who are the leading members of the Bristol YCL?
Oh, at those days, there was a chap called Stan Forsey, a chap called Evans. Can't remember his Christian name. Fair, pleasant-looking chap. Stan Forsey, Evans. What others were there? I don't know, we're gone, it's too long ago.
Were they students or working class boys? And
working,
girls, or
working class boys, yes. Evans, I remember, worked for the insurance office, London and Lancashire. Funny how you remember some little things like this. Jack Nation was another member. Jack Nation.
Were they all about your age?
Yes, they were, perhaps a little older.
Were they all boys or girls?
These were boys. I don't remember any girls. There were girls there, but they weren't serious. They weren't so serious. They were quite intelligent, but I think that they didn't have the dedication at that stage in the blokes' heads. In some ways now, I think the situation's reversed, and I think you've got as many girls dedicated today as boys. But then it was blokes.
You talked about political education in the Guild of Youth. and Brailsford and Hardy and Blatchford and so on.
Yes.
How did the political education in the YSL compare with that?
Well, I would say that whether it's fair to call one education and the other indoctrination, I'm not quite sure, but there was the education from communist sources consisted mainly of the daily worker and its weekly young counterpart for youngsters, the Challenge, and very orthodox leaflets and pamphlets, some coming from the Friends of the Soviet Union and that sort of thing. Why I say in the case of the Young Communist League you could call it indoctrination is because it came from one source, whereas with the RP, the Guild of Youth, that they didn't all say the same thing. Very often you would get almost contradictory things from the socialist camp. I mean, the Fabians were quite different from the militant types. They weren't in existence in quite that way then, but you had the trends and the arguments in the same way. So you had very much a sort of reformist versus revolution type of education in the Guild of Youth. But in the Young Communist League, there was the one voice. And I don't think this is deliberate. I think history had caused it to happen like that. So that I think you felt happier as a young communist because you mainly got the one trend and you felt quite good about it, rather in the religious sense that everybody is happy if they think of one God and it's their God. And as soon as you start to introduce other gods, people are unhappy and, you know, it sort of upsets things a lot, doesn't it? So I therefore, for a time, felt more political security with the Young Communist League, but that was to be very short-lived indeed, in fact.
Now, coming on to Spain, did you take any interest in Spanish affairs before the Civil War broke out?
No, not at all. No, any more than, I should say, more Italian because of the Mussolini connection. We'd all heard of that, but we'd hardly heard of anything to do with Spain. None at all. And the main thing about Spain was the fact that we knew it had a democratically elected government, and we knew that that government was being overthrown by military means. And why this happened on the scale it did throughout the world is still a bit of a puzzle. And I say throughout the world because people came from very much France, I think, contributed the greatest number of volunteers. And I think America also. There were more Americans than Englishmen, in fact. But everywhere, people did feel this this need. And there are a couple of Americans, Stansky and Abrahams, that have written a book about George Orwell, and they came over here to talk to me about this. And I said to them, well, look, you know, there's been a lot of wars since. Why concentrate on this one now, sort of 50 years ago? And they said it was because it was the last war that you got such a big human response to. And I think it was Stansky, he said, you don't get people volunteering for Vietnam, he said. And he made the point that in those days, something as manifestly unfair as an elected government being overthrown by military means caused people to react and think that they could do something about it. But today it isn't like that. You've got the feeling that you cannot do anything about it, as in Vietnam. I mean, you can go to the embassy and protest, as a lot of us do. But you don't feel that you can do anything about it by getting involved militarily. In those days, we did.
So, were you still a member of Bristol YCL when the Franco revolt occurred?
I was, yes. And appeals for volunteers were made, and the ILP appealed for volunteers to join the Independent Labour Party contingent, and at the same time the International Brigade from King Street were appealing for volunteers. And probably this shows the sort of keenness and folly of youth, but I volunteered with both of them, you see, saying I would take whichever one came up first. And ILP, the Independent Labour Party contingent, Bob Edwards led it, and so I went with them because they contacted me earlier.
I think we should say King Street was the Communist Party national headquarters.
You're quite right, yes. Surely that won't be common knowledge now, it was then.
Now, how did you actually apply to join the ILP?
Just wrote a letter, gave them my background. I was well known, of course, to a lot of ILPers in London, and the broadness of the movement at the time was, well, and there wasn't much difference between being a youthful member of the, whether it was Labour League of Youth, ILP Guild of Youth, or Young Communist League,